Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleMania 40 Night 1 review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by another Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on Night 1 of WrestleMania 40. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube. Do daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0, AEW Dynamite, AEW Collision, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestling culture. As I said, joined by Michael Sidgwick to review Night 1 of WrestleMania 40. Sidge, the legacy of Night 1s is a pretty high standard. How did this one live up to your expectations?
Well, it didn't necessarily, but luckily the trend has been subverted in 2024, which is just as well, realistically. My overall thoughts on the show were, if you have been, you know, tormented by WWE for as long as a lot of people, including myself, have, you will have an inner hater. That inner hater was validated once. But if you're not completely dead inside, which not quite yet,
nope.
There was lots of earnestly great pro wrestling, even on the inferior night, to just enjoy immensely. So, you know, the ironic and earnest part of my heart had a great old time on Night 1.
Yeah, good, not great, I think is the best way of...
I think it was a lower the shot, but yeah. I'd prefer, like, every extreme of emotion.
And we will be talking about Night 2, of course, in due course. But let's start at the beginning of Night 1. It opened with a women's title match between Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch. We touched on this with some of our reporting already. I was surprised just how over Becky Lynch was. Not how over, I should say. How beloved, I suppose, Rhea Ripley was. And how people weren't as behind Becky Lynch as I thought they were going to be.
Yeah, sometimes these Northeast crowds are really quite harsh. And this was kind of the case here. Like, Becky Lynch has done nothing but be incredible for a few years. But Rhea Ripley is red hot.
Yeah.
Absolutely red hot in Becky Lynch's popularity. On this night, at least, maybe it was an aberration. Certainly, there were no rumblings in the build that the fans had turned on her. I just think, realistically, they preferred Rhea Ripley on this night.
Yeah, I think going into it, and I've said this in predictions and stuff, I just assumed they were going to, you know, take the title off Rhea. Maybe she has some time away,
yeah.
Or maybe she just goes and does something else or whatever. And they move on with Becky champion. And then as soon as they all came out and the match started, I thought, oh, they're definitely, if they've got any sense, they're keeping the title on Rhea because of how over she is with this crowd. We should caveat our analysis of the match with the fact that Becky Lynch had a fever of 105.
Yes.
Strep throat or some illness, which is incredible to think that she even got through the match.
Yeah.
And it was a really enjoyable match. It wasn't, you and I have talked about this prior to filming, you said yourself, it wasn't the heights of Charlotte and Rhea from last year, but that's a hell of a bar to clear. I'll run you through some of the stuff that happened
very, very quickly.
Really hard hitting match.
You've probably all seen it.
Yes. There was a great Riptide reversal into a manhandle slam.
Oh my god, we do not have the soundboard with us overseas, but that would be getting pushed if we did.
Yeah. There was also a great reversal into a Riptide for a two count. That bit where it was the superplex that Becky hit into the disarmer into an electric chair, which spilled to the outside.
It looked unbelievable.
And then was hit on the outside. Then we got a frog splash for two. But in the end, Rhea Ripley, consecutive riptides, gets to the 1-2-3. She retains.
Indeed. Very quick analysis, I guess, because there's a lot to get through in the main event of night one. It's very, very difficult to generate an atmosphere in a stadium. It just is. It takes a lot of star power. It takes sheer craftsmanship.
Manner.
And it takes a certain in-ring storyline. Limb work tends not to fly in a stadium setting. There are people high up in the gods squinting. Even the screens seem small in such a massive cavernous stadium like that. So limb work matches are quite difficult. And obviously Becky Lynch's key weapon is the disarmor, which she was constantly going for early. And a wonky dynamic doesn't help either.
No.
If the women are telling the story of Becky Lynch babyface and Rhea Ripley heel, and the crowd simply aren't playing along with that, anything that Becky Lynch does, a smart strategy, or, oh, if I could do this move, I could get the disarmor from there, usually you'd go, oh, get in, Becky. But that's not happening. People love Rhea Ripley. A lot of incredibly thirsty-seeming men in and around me, him included, were very, very, very thirsty for Rhea Ripley. So it was really hard to concentrate, as it is in general in the stadium setting. But once the bombs started getting trading, they did some really stadium-sized feats of strength, like the spot that you just mentioned. The crowd really got into it. There were some gnarly bumps as well. A gnarly bump in a stadium will always help. And the riptide into the turnbuckle was great. I got that little bit of the energy of that classic between Rhea and Charlotte last year. Not quite enough so that the two matches are comparable, but I thought they really got there in the end. Took some doing.
Then we got the tag title ladder match. It was sort of a giveaway. We said this in the stadium. It was a giveaway that they were splitting the tag titles because they put them apart from each other, and they said the match continues, but if you grab one set of belts, that, you know, means you're champion of that brand, but not necessarily the match is over, etc. We had very early on Tyler Bate, new Catch Republic, got an airplane spin with Finn Balor and a ladder on his shoulders, which was an incredible thing to see. I'm intrigued because it was one of those things where we were surprised by who won the first set of tag belts, but you can't deny, as much as, you know, we may roll our eyes at the Awesome Truth team, you can't deny how over they were, and R-Truth obviously in particular. I mean, it was preposterous. R-Truth was waiting for a hot tag and got a three count in a ladder match for the belts. But it was, people were loving it in the stadium. And then, yeah, we got the first title switch away from the Judgment Day. They unfortunately lost both. Was not a team I ever would have picked. We barely picked them making up the numbers in this match, but Grayson Waller and Austin Theory are your new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. Surprised by that?
No. As soon as the stipulation was put in place, it was very easy to foresee a split. And, you know, because it's WrestleMania, and the old take was, oh, it's a series finale. It wasn't. You're actually doing Backlash a month later. It really feels like they are trying to do that these days. And part of that is, well, you want people to be happy, I guess. So there's a lot of babyface wins and title victories. Across that mid-card, you needed probably some tag team champions who are heels. Probably time for the Judgment Day to drop them. So, no, I thought that was going to go that way.
I also like the fact that they did that. And we were like, why don't you up there? Why not grab the other set of belts? And they went to do
that. While you're up there, love.
Yeah, and Grayson Waller took a rough old bump through that ladder bridge on the outside.
Oh, my God. I will never, ever get bored of a suspended ladder bridge bump. It always looks so gruesome. Like, wrestling fans, I think I'm in love with you. I've met so many awesome ones this weekend. Like, countless. It's been so great. I love wrestling fans, but you've kind of got it wrong. Don't chant for tables. I understand it's a bit more unwieldy. Chant for suspended ladder bridges. Just looks tits.
Grayson Waller has developed a rather unfortunate knack of taking preposterous spots over WrestleMania weekend.
Absolutely. Look, like, this match is completely dependent on your subjective enjoyment of the R-Truth character and his antics, right? If you love it, you are probably in dreamland here.
Michael Hamflett,
because if you find him funny, he was on form. This is very much an R-Truth match, okay? And if you like him, once he was sort of, you know, the Awesome Truth were doing the customary selling on the outside, you got this really good match within a match between DIY and the New Catch Republic, which was what a proper WWE ladder match looks like. So, yeah, this is very sports entertainment. It's R-Truth, okay? But then you got the feel-good babyface win. That's pure professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. You got some real heat. JD McDonagh's interference spot got some real heat. Grayson Waller and, well, A-Town Down Under's title win got some serious heat. People in the stadium love to hate that development. So you got comedy, violence, pro wrestling, sports entertainment. The way I look at this match is it's something for everyone, as WWE gets.
Yeah, I felt a bit guilty making my notes throughout this night, throughout both nights, because you're just trying to cover the big spots and what have you. It's like these are taking some horrible bumps. So I am going to give a quick nod to Regeneration X DIY. We got a Gargano one final beat to the outside through a table. I think this was the bit with the
that was Tyler Bate. He bait his bollocks in there.
Yes, and there was an air raid crash immediately after that off the ladder by Tommaso Ciampa. I like the way they played with the JD McDonagh interference, because it's like JD McDonagh interferes, seems to help the Judgment Day, then JD McDonagh takes another ridiculous bump. And it's like, right, just because he's out of the picture doesn't stop the Judgment Day. You thought for a split second maybe Damian Priest, who we thought, oof, I'm going to have a great weekend, some more on that tomorrow, might grab the belts. But in the end, an AA to Priest from R-Truth, of course. And then, R-Truth and The Miz are your new Raw Tag Team Champions.
Yeah, it took him ages to actually climb the ladder, but that was more like feature, not a bug, like the R-Truth character probably would.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as bad as the Jack Swagger briefcase grab.
I mean, I'm 38 years old, so I had a bit of a miserable time with 50% of this match. But look, there's no real such thing as objectivity, but you know, as close to it as possible, that stadium lost their minds for R-Truth. So an obvious resounding success.
Then we got the tag team match of Rey Mysterio and Andrade versus Santos Escobar and Dirty Dominic Mysterio. Full disclosure, I missed the beginning of this match because I went for a wee and a pint.
Okay, well, I'll do the play-by-play in Wilborn's absence. It just existed to such an extent that I have forgotten.
The only thing I remember, or the thing I think I came back to, or maybe you've just subsequently seen, was that it was one of my favourite non-finishers. Andrade back elbow and just killed Dominic Mysterio.
And he took some really good bumps. He gets a deserved rap. I know he's only been in it 4 years. Mechanically, he remains quite poor. I see a lot of mistakes in his matches.
That's fair.
He bumped really quite well. Like, he just got that stooging heel bump down pat at WrestleMania. Bodes well. His record on the big stage is actually really good.
So I came back and it was all just breaking down, basically, and all the others that were there, your Angels, Umberto's, Wild, Del Toro, and of course Zelina Vega and Electra Lopez. So Zelina takes out Electra. We get a ridiculous, I was really happy he got this on the big stage after we
saw my, get even halfway up the goddamn ramp.
The Joaquin Wild. Can we do a big spring thing off the ropes to the outside?
The best thing about that, right, and this is a bit of like an insider perspective, I guess, is the really nerdy way of putting it. We were really high. We were obviously there live. Yeah. Really high up in the gods, to the point where certain matches, depending on the phase of it, if they're doing like submissions and stuff, I'm watching it on the big screen. Mm-hmm. I can't sense the struggle or anything like that. As soon as I saw Joaquin Wild set up for that spot, I was like, right, eyes trained to the real bodies on the ramp.
Yes.
And it's like, my God. So I want to get like a real perspective of just the distance that he clears, because no camera can ever really do that.
No.
It's like Commander's rope walk I saw in Vegas last year. It's so much more impressive in the flesh. Honestly, people embellish, and we're YouTube content creators, so we're going to do the same thing. But my God, he just went forever. So awesome to see that live.
I was confident of several things going into night one. I was relatively confident they were going to do Bloodline Rules, so therefore a win for these two at the end of night one. I was supremely confident, the most confident, that the babyface team of Cargill and Belair and Naomi were going to get the victory. And I was almost equally as confident that Carlito was going to screw Rey Mysterio over, because he'd been mugged off twice. But that didn't happen.
Yes.
The end of the match saw two masked men who, how can I put this, had body shapes I couldn't distinguish who they were, got involved. We're like, who on earth's that? And how are they connected to all this? Anyway, they interfere. Rey eventually hits the 619, gets the win for his team. And it is revealed that it is Jason Kelsey and Lane Johnson. American footballers, huge hometown pop and a nice babyface celebration.
Yeah, look, this was just a glorified TV match.
Yes.
On a grand stage with some really cool moments in it. The, almost the epitome of what a WWE PLE mid-card match looks like. I still, like, I contend to this day that they should have just done this, like, incredible multi-man.
Yes.
Because the match started to realise its, like, awesome potential just before the finish.
Yeah.
A bit too late when we saw some absolutely incredible spots and the supporting cast were drawn into it. If it was just that for 10 minutes, this would have kicked ass. Mm. But as it was fine with some cool moments in it. Shallow, but okay.
Yeah, that's fair. Then we got Jey versus Jimmy Uso, which was incredible. And then the bell rang. The Jey Uso entrance is something you have to be a part of as a wrestling fan. You're looking around the stadium. You know, it's just a sea of people, isn't it, doing all the same thing. But the match itself, oh boy, you've probably seen the discussion about this online. It was a super kick party, basically. A punch exchange, so we got the whole yeet, no yeet thing. Dude wipes were arguably more over than the match were at one point. And then the crux of the match came down to that they've super kicked each other a billion times at this point, and Jimmy's like, no more. I was sat at this point, because I think we had gone to the toilet and sort of switched seats. I think I was sat the furthest away from you, and I still heard you when Jimmy went, please, no more. And Jey went, okay. He went, we've just been doing it for 10 minutes. What's changed? But anyway, Jimmy begs off. He says he's sorry. You get all the bloodline melodrama we've gotten used to over the past couple of years. He holds out his hand. Jey stupidly takes it, gets dropped, gets super kicked, gets splashed. But thankfully, in the right decision, in my opinion, Jey Uso kicks out.
Get it over with.
And he hits a spear, an Uso splash. Jey Uso gets the 1-2-3. A forgettable match is probably the nicest way I can describe this.
Yeah, no, it's an inaccurate way to describe it, Will. But it wasn't forgettable. I think this is going to go down in the annals of history as a total bomb on the main stage. Not the worst thing about building this match around super kicks, right? You know what the worst thing isn't? The worst thing isn't, oh, people blame the Young Bucks for that. Get that kind of discourse out of your head. I mean, it's obviously true. You should not be a hypocrite in general. It's a good way to live life. Building this match around super kick, super kick, super kick, super kick, super kick, right? They're not even that good at super kicks. They don't get the thrust element. Mm. There's always this lean back, aim your foot in the direction of the chin, slap the thigh. They don't get that thrust. It's a thrust kick. I had to watch like the worst super kicks in wrestling
for about 10 minutes.
There's a certain Scottish wrestler who's worse. I'll point him out in case he's cancelled. But other than that, other than him, they're not very good at throwing super kicks. This match was built and structured as an excuse to get fans to chant yeet or no yeet.
Yes.
That doesn't happen at the cinema, which I apparently took a trip to on Saturday night. It's pantomime.
Yes.
I don't know what the word is in America, but it's pantomime. In England, this is laughable. The acting was awful. The action was sloppy. It was so pretentious. I can't think. They thought this was good. Mm. Who wrote this down and thought this was good? Mm. A moron, probably.
Moving on. Well, the right result, Jey Uso, getting the win.
As long as it's over and done with, yeah, for sure.
And that would obviously play.
Having said
too.
That, I know it's a different era. We were told that a cynical amount of times, but they did make a trilogy out of Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler, so who knows? And that match was better than this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The next match was, as I said, rather predictable and nevertheless really enjoyable from the moment we got the entrances. It was Damage Control versus the mega team of Bianca Belair, Naomi and Jade Cargill. They were on this big platform. They looked like superstars from the moment they made their entrance. And poor Damage Control. They got a bit of offense in, but basically Bianca Belair beat them all three of them up. Then she got in a bit of trouble.
Oh my God, the hair whip. I know she shouldn't do it every time.
Yeah.
But it's so great.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Because partly because she doesn't do it all of the time.
And especially because in a stadium where, you know, you'd lose some of the promos.
She is a fantastic stadium worker. I know what you're about to say.
The hair whip carries no matter where you're on. So you can hear it everywhere. Anyway, Jade Cargill made the save for Bianca when she got isolated by Damage Control, who try and cut corners. Asuka accidentally missed Kairi Sane. Naomi took her out. We got the hair whip, as you mentioned, the KOD to Asuka, and Dakota Kai tries her best, but Jade Cargill, in the words of Adam Nicholas, chucks her around like an empty tracksuit, hits Jaded, 1, 2, 3.
I've said this a million times, probably we'll say it a few more times. The first WrestleManias on VHS I got were 5, 6, and 7.
Mm-hmm.
That era, sort of the dying embers of the golden era. Like, well, the very best, and then the fade, the slow fade. Oh my God, I've got such nostalgia for it. And I watched those tapes over and over again. And half of the matches on those shows were sub 10 minutes, featuring these visually striking baby faces with incredible physiques, who did incredibly simple, unfussy, feel-good babyface victories. I don't think it was intentionally a callback to that, but it was like watching Silver Vision video. Mm. The gear, just the simplicity, the brevity, didn't outstay its welcome. It was just easy to just sit there, mouth agape, sensory overload. Oh, there's the finish.
Yeah.
I felt like Hamlet watching this, in a good way.
Yeah. There's been a lot of talk recently, Sige, with all the changes in WWE, about WWE production, and I think it's slightly overblown in terms of they haven't really done a great deal different. I mean, they've done some great shots, and I like this stuff that they've implemented. A lot of it for me, though, is them taking stuff out, don't do as many camera cuts or whatever. But we have to talk about WWE production now, because it formed part of, arguably, I think I'd say probably my match of the weekend in terms of actual wrestling rather than shenanigans and what have you. I'm talking about the Intercontinental Championship match between Sami Zayn and Gunther. We don't start at the beginning of this match. We start in the bowels of the building, don't we?
Yes.
Sami with his family doing that walk. We follow him through the tunnels and what have you to bring him to Gorilla. And honestly, I got a bit emotional when he turns that corner and there's Kevin Owens waiting for him.
Me too. The thing is right, I can understand more than most the cynicism of prior to this year. Like, there's been a lot of Triple H elevating WWE above the lowest bar imaginable.
Yes.
The bar was in hell. What really pissed me off, right, is when they started saying wrestling on TV, and then people going mental and saying, oh my God, it's wrestling again. And like, oh my God, the storylines make sense now. It's like, they're supposed to! They are supposed to! We've just completely lost sight of our standards here. I don't want to be as cynical as I am. I try not to be, genuinely, right? I think it's too cynical to say, oh, not doing camera cuts anymore and everyone's losing their mind. This is genuinely a really good production choice, because it followed you. You saw him have this conversation with his family. Unfortunately, we couldn't hear it in the stadium, but we could infer.
Yes.
So I could be talking about the, you know, theory of relativity with his young son. He's obviously saying, I'm going to do it for you or whatever. And we could infer things. Very easy to do that. Hmm. And then you get in his frame of mind and you follow him on his journey and you get the perspective of how much would you feel the butterflies? Because previously we only see the entrance and they're having fun and they're fired up. You get that, it feels very intimate. Then you think, imagine going into the mouth of, well, hell, if you're wrestling Gunther.
Yes.
I thought this was unbelievable. And be wary, and this is me saying it, so I know it's not remotely credible. Be wary of being too cynical. You will stop yourself from enjoying things like this.
Mm. Yeah, it was just brilliant. He came out, and you know, that moment with Kevin Owens, and you and I both sort of turned to each other and said, oh God, I've gone from thinking this is a fine story and I'm, you know, Sami Zayn and Gunther are brilliant.
The match will be really good on the night.
Exactly, but it's, you know, it's a shame it's not Chad. It is what it is. It's probably going to be a retention for Gunther. We're both like, God, I really want Sami to win this one now.
As soon as he talked to his kid, that's it for me.
Yeah.
I'm a parent now, so yeah. I'm really soft.
I got an element of that for the first time.
Yeah.
Slight misstep early on because he thought it was a good idea to chop Gunther. It's not. As a result of that, Gunther just manhandles Sami, as he's done with all of his opponents, basically. And, well, the story of this match is he'd won it. He'd beaten Sami Zayn. I know Sami Zayn's the underdog and he fights and he's got this resiliency and what have you. But for all the people, who I heard say, like, oh, well, doesn't this loss weaken Gunther? No, because...
Oh, they did it, handled it really well.
Yeah, so he... You get a bit of Sami offense, like he tries for a Helluva kick, he gets drop kicked and power bombed, but he kicks out, and then they exchange Helluva kicks. In fact, Sami can only get two. There's two big power bombs.
Oh, they look great as well.
Sami kicks out of them, and then Gunther just, this is the crux of the match again. Gunther is gesticulating and talking to Sami's wife of just like.
His face was unbelievable.
A sadistic grin coming across him. He's
just an arrogant bastard.
I think my notes say he only did two big splashes from the top. It felt like he was doing about 10. He just
That's because they mean something.
Splash, you know, argue with Sammy's partner, go up, splash. Did it over and over and over again. But he's taking too long. He's distracted. He's not focused on his goal, which he has been throughout the entirety of this Intercontinental Championship reign, which... brilliantly, I didn't realise until afterwards, was 666 days. Anyway, he gets distracted there. He gets hit with a Helluva kick on the top
rope. Very Triple H, that, innit?
Yes.
Probably didn't want even Sami to do the job. It's like, you have to now.
Yeah, now someone's told me.
Like, you have to now. It's the most metal reign of all time. Do you know he likes metal?
He does. He does, yeah. Indeed, in skulls. talk me through, because you're far more knowledgeable about this topic than I am.
Not really?
Talk me through... Helluva kick, Gunther's in trouble, Sami goes to grab him on the top rope. What's going through your head there?
I hope, genuinely hope, this match, right, it's not just about moves. Everyone who's anyone kind of knows this at this point. What helps is that the execution of the moves was also incredible. Like, the safest but most devastating looking powerbomb you'll ever see. If they really looked as bad as they would, you would see Sami's head bounce up like that. It only appears that way. Like, Gunther is a genuine master of the craft. This match is so smartly constructed to generate this building, growing sense of cruel hope. And it's cruel hope because until Saturday night, Gunther doesn't lose. Not only does he not lose, he does not lose makeshift matches that were not in the original plan.
Mm.
When potentially he's not even that hot as a performer, and certainly compared to last year. This is magic, man. A growing sense of, you need to do this. Yeah, you kind of need to do this. Look at the way he's going on. So when he goes to the top rope, I'm thinking, do it. I don't immediately have that cynical mindset that I kind of often do when I watch WWE programming of, oh, this won't be that good, or they waste certain resources.
Or they won't
let him do it. But I have, because they've expertly given me the hope, and the way they've built this, I was like, he's doing the brainbuster. He is doing the brainbuster, and he did the goddamn brainbuster. I lost my mind. I made the point, I don't do it to dig out WWE's process. It's obviously incredibly successful to them, for them. But they have a narrative discipline where You know, you don't get the big match all of the time. You don't get the head drop moves. You don't get the blood we saw that on the Go Home show. You certainly don't get the brain buster. Then, like, discipline is such a really useful tool in storytelling. If you don't do it, how much more effective was this? Absolutely incredible. I thought the layout was genius. I thought the body language was great. Sami Zayn with a stadium-sized body language, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
He's thrashing around on the canvas. You have to... It's like, it's not row Z, it's like row Z, 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 Z,
yes.
Z. Like, it's so high up. I can't say enough good things about this match. I thought it was a modern WWE masterclass.
And it speaks to the aura that Gunther's made for himself, that he gets Helluva kicked, he gets dropped with a brainbuster on the top turnbuckle, he gets hit with another Helluva kick. And I'm still thinking, oh God, Sammy's taking too long setting up for this last one, and he's now going to get drop kicked or chopped or whatever. But no, he hits a final Helluva kick, collapses onto Gunther. 1, 2, 3, he's the new Intercontinental Champion.
I literally couldn't believe it, but then I wanted to believe it. This is honestly, in terms of pure emotion, very little has struck me like this in a long time.
Right, let's get to the main event. It was the Killers in the Jungle, The Rock, Roman Reigns, taking on Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. Was this second longest main event in WrestleMania history?
Behind the Iron Man, yeah.
Behind a match that obligatory has to go over an hour.
I'm just shocked that they beat Triple H. I thought he would want that preserved forever.
And they built this very slowly and meticulously. Cody and Seth team up to take down The Rock early on, and then they split off and they brawl on the outside and then brawl into the crowd. You've got The Rock and Seth going into the crowd, into the audience, where there's like bins getting lobbed at each other and throwing each other into barricades, whilst Cody and Roman go up the ramp and like chuck each other into the lettering. But the focus mainly was, at least in the cameras on the stadium, was on Rock and Seth,
which was damning, really.
Yes.
But it had the effect, I would argue, even at the peaks of this match, spoiler, the Night 2 main event was way hotter than this. Way hotter. I think it's because they took the piss, realistically.
Yeah, there's one terrifying moment, because, you know, we know what's coming on night two. We know how certain people need to make sure you don't take any silly bumps.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
how easily wrestlers... I saw Roman throw Cody off the ramp into just, you know, the steel guardrail, the bits protecting the crowd there. I thought, that's a dodgy bump to take the night before he could be winning the world championship, for example. Anyway, that leaves Roman...
But that's the drive that makes a world champion.
That leaves Roman alone, though, and Seth's beating up Rock. He slides him into the ring, and Roman chop blocks Seth's leg as he's getting into the ring, and they just isolate him at that point. It's a lot of limb work, as you say, which at that time of night, at that temperature of night,
it was freezing cold. If you're wondering why people weren't into it as much as you might think, it's not just the pace. It was freezing cold, man.
Yeah, Michael Cole apparently was doing regular weather updates, and we really didn't need that in the stands. And even if people were clapping, because we were clapping along with it, you can't hear people clapping gloves. So
yeah, I had four layers on, and I was still freezing.
And it didn't, you know, you said on Twitter, like, after a while, Seth, we didn't care about his leg work, and neither did Seth. Anyway, so they've isolated Seth. Eventually, The Rock puts him in a sharpshooter, and Cody comes in and just slaps the taste out of Rock's mouth. There's a stomp to The Rock, a Cody cutter to Roman, a Superman punch, a stomp to Roman, and a crossroads. And it looks like... Well, there was a point of this match, it was so weird compared to how we felt the next night, where they made it look like Cody and Seth might do this, and I was going, don't. So The Rock took the referee after all this. Very early on, by the way, when they brawled to the outside, I should point out, we didn't hear this, but we've subsequently discovered it, and you could again infer this. Basically said to the ref, we're not doing count outs in this match. You do a count out and you're fired.
The thing is right, people said, oh, why did that happen? As a trained AEW viewer, I'm just conditioned that count outs don't matter anyway.
Yeah.
You know, they're just the part of my brain has just been switched off, apparently.
So The Rock took the ref. It was a low blow to Cody, a spear, but he kicks out. And so The Rock decides to really rub it in at this point. If Cody's going to shove it in their face and kick out, stuff like that. He gets the weight belt. He takes it over to Mama Rhodes. Sets up for the people's elbow. A brilliant just pop-up
straight into the Cody cutter from Cody Rhodes on The Rock. You have a crossroads reversed into a Superman punch as Roman gets back into this. But then Roman speared The Rock, another phenomenal sell by The Rock in there. That was the bit where, this is what I was talking about, where they both, Seth and Cody, hit pedigrees and get the count. I'm like, please kick out. They both do kick out at two. Cody eventually, they go to the outside. Cody rock bottoms The Rock through the announce table, which looked tits.
Yeah,
to steal a phrase of yours. And it was so well done as well, because they do that spot after Rock's set up initially for the rock bottom on Cody. Reverse rock bottom to The Rock through the table. And then a split second later, you get a Roman spearing Seth through the barricade. And Cody gets Roman in there, gets him with the sets up for two of the three crossroads, and then a sort of slight mirroring, more on that tomorrow night, of the finish to last year's main event. Two crossroads, he sets up for the third, but he stumbles into the corner and he gets whipped with the weight belt by The Rock, and therefore he lets go. There's a spear, Roman's got the match won, but he wants to give this to the people's champion, to the final boss, I should say, The Rock. And he brings The Rock in, he sets up. It's one of those rare times he sets up the rock bottom and actually hits it. People's elbow, 1, 2, 3. The killers in the jungle are victorious, and it's Bloodline rules on night two.
Indeed. Right. The most succinct way I can put of putting this across, my thoughts on this match, it was a 1.75 star match with some like 5-star feeling to it.
Yes.
This was the worst excesses of a Triple H style WrestleMania match with a really class last 6 or 7 minutes. I was getting really, really wound up, really cold. There was like, you know, when there's, I've often said, right, there are a few things better as a wrestling fan. There's a match that you're looking forward to, and within the first minute, you know, oh my God, this is meeting my expectations. Yet none of the worry or whatever going in, because you know, we do get invested in these things, and it's just like, oh, strap in, this is going to be great. There are a few things worse as a wrestling fan than just watching something not click, watching something that's clearly wildly too ambitious, watching something that you just know, I could easily go for a piss. I don't want to go for a piss when Hollywood Rock's back, and yet the walk and brawl, there's no chaos, no energy, no violence. And after they've said, there's no rules, you'll fire your ass, there's bloodline rules, blah, blah, blah. They don't really do much in the way of brawling. And then they politely go back to the ring and do 10 minutes of working over Seth's knee. Oh my God. It's like, well, if you're Cody and Seth, do you think, oh, well, obviously it's some rules for them and not the other? Why didn't Cody just go in and put an end to that complete bollocks? It was very like, disjointed. One thing should logically inform the next in any kind of story, a traditional story. It's no different in wrestling. I just don't know why the limb work had to happen when I was that cold, when Sami Zayn didn't care, and had already set, or tried and failed to set a tone of violence. So I was just like, I cannot believe this isn't good, and I'm really upset. And then it got goated.
Yeah.
With some complete bollocks and plunder, yeah. And shortcuts and smoke and mirrors, that if they weren't so genuinely, like, it was pretentious as hell, this match. Pretentious as hell. Then I realise what they're still capable of. And look, I get it. You have to start slow to make something like the rock bottom through the table count.
Ugh.
I understand the mentality behind a build, but it was just wasted time. I will say, the stuff at the end was so fun that left the stadium in a great mood. In a great mood.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with you on the first part, maybe because I was blinded by a variety of different things. Like you say, I'm
the star power for a star.
Yeah, you've got the megastars, and then you've got my literal favourite wrestler of all time. Yeah. So I'm there tweeting in the slower parts, oh, I never want this match to end. And then also, yeah, like you say, the ending was so bombastic, and such a brilliant tease for what was to come on night two. I just was ecstatic by the end of it. And like I say, you know, we all want Cody to finish the story. Wanted Cody to finish the story, but this was the night where everyone was like, "Yeah, but not tonight. You need to lose tonight because we want Bloodline rules tomorrow." And we were all fairly confident that was going to happen. You don't tease something like that as they have done in recent weeks and not deliver on that. But it was one of those ones as well. You know, I've never seen The Rock ever, you know, let alone, you know, not even setting his name on fire.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do it. And it was such a wonderful sort of checklist of everything I wanted from The Rock. The entrance might be the best.
Andy, we should mention it.
Might be the greatest WrestleMania entrance of all time. Andy called this, and I've got to agree with him on that one. You know, to steal from The Rock, I was very much like the goosebumps were out and the manor was flowing around Lincoln Financial Field. And then it's like, okay, if you're going to ask, you know, 8-year-old me, what would you like to see if you ever got to see The Rock? Well, I want to see the entrance. I want The Rock to win. And I'd really like him to do the big setup and hit the Rock Bottom and the People's Elbow. And, you know, they've done the teasers throughout the matches we've alluded to. In fact, he did all that. I was like, cool, so this is the best match ever. I tweeted this. I said, cool, best WrestleMania main event ever until tomorrow night. And, yeah, we will be reviewing that in due course. But please do let us know your thoughts on this first night, on the main event, and on everything we've discussed in the comment section below, or on X at WhatCultureWWE, where you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. And do check out our Night 2 review, which is coming your way very soon as well. But for now, my thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.